This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLDTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
Five, four, three, two, one. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with
Poor Andrew the Apprentice.
On Hide and Seek.
This is Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. My name is Andrew the Apprentice. Arvy Miller's with me this evening.
Hello.
And Arvy, over the next hour, this is really not just your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self, but it's your show for exploring sex, sexuality and disability.
Oh, God, you went there, didn't you?
I did.
We've already got into trouble from Kath.
I know.
Really?
I'm sure we could get in more trouble throughout over the next hour.
Joining us in the studio, we have Kath, who self-describes herself as a 50-something Bansta pansexual switch stump fucking goddess.
Yeah.
It's tremendous. I hope you have a t-shirt that says that. That's tremendous.
That's a really good idea. Yeah, I just want to kind of whack it in all one digestible sentence.
Joining us as well, Jack's Jackie Brown is a freelance writer, spoken word performer and troublemaker.
Yep. Yes. Hello.
Now, I have to start with Jax. You run a women's conference entitled Fuckability, Fucking with a Non-Normative Body, Queering Up Sex.
Well, not an actual women's conference, although right. That would be pretty amazing. Mm. It's a workshop.
I'm going to go now.
Workshop.
Yeah. A workshop.
Okay.
What was the motivation behind starting that workshop for you?
Well, I wanted to impress a girl. We were going to a women's conference together. And I thought, what is the most raunchy name I can come up with for a workshop? And so I did, and that's what I came up to.
Did it impress the girl?
Yeah, did
it work? Of course it did. Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
So, Kath, starting off, what word should we be using in this space? You know, it's one of those things that people go, oh, do you say disability? Do you say disabled? Do you say
differently
impaired?
Abled, yeah.
What are some correct terms that people should be using?
I don't think there's any sort of rule book of correct terms that's going to work anything outside this studio, let alone with other people then across the world, then across Australia and with different groups. It's sort of like terms for black people or gay guys and all this. Mm. There's going to be words that are okay right here or between you two that won't be okay among other people. So say with Jax, because Jax and I both come from a disability studies background, so we're very imbued by an amazing magical thingy called the social model of disability, which is about seeing disability as a sort of a flexible kind of, what would you call it, sort of ever-changing state. In a sense, sort of, you know, able-bodiedness is the illusion and disability is the norm in a lot of ways. But also, you know, we regard ourselves as being people who are disabled by our environment. There's nothing wrong with us. I was born this way and so was she. Mm. And so, you know, in certain environments we are, you might say, less disabled. And so we use certain language. Like if I was going to say, okay, so what's good right now? I'd say, hey, talk to us about crip sex or being crips or in my case, a freak. I don't know. Do you want to be a freak too?
Yeah, I'm warming to the idea of being a freak. Yeah.
She's more a crip. I'm more a freak. But don't call everyone that. Oh, man, are you going to get into trouble?
But as you said, it's like queer or fag.
Yeah. Some people, it's like
you
right
can
on.
You can own it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about reclaiming terms, and I think it depends on where your politics are. So if you're more left-wing and more radical, then you're going to be down with, you know, freak and crip. But if you're more of a conservative person with a disability, then maybe you want the person first and not the disability.
Yeah, you know, person with disability, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very common in Australia.
I was going to say, what?
We've confused him.
No.
I don't know where to go with that.
No, I was going to say, where's the safe place to start? If I'm, so one of the big questions that I've had with friends of mine who are disabled is, when you meet somebody for the first time who's disabled, do you acknowledge, not acknowledge? What is the right etiquette in social circumstances. I know I'm being very vague about that. I apologize.
Well, you know, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because, like, Jax has got a few good stories about being approached. Remember the lady at the party went up to and goes, oh, hello, why are you in the wheelchair? And you go, we're at a party, you know. It might be something else we can talk about. And she said, I'm not interested in anything else, and walked off. I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
So that was obviously not good.
Yeah, no. And it's interesting, sometimes people will do the whole, they must have read it somewhere or seen it in some manual on how to talk to someone in a wheelchair. And they kind of kneel down in front of you really uncomfortably, kind of on their tippy toes, and proceed to have this really awkward conversation where they're like, we're making a lot of eye contact, I've gone to a big effort to be at your level because I know how to talk to you, but they're so fucking uncomfortable, and I'm like, just stand up, it's all right, it's okay, I'm used to having conversations with people that are taller than me, just be relaxed, it's fine. So I think it depends on the person and the people and the dynamic of the people, and there is no hard and fast rules for how to have an interesting conversation with any human being. It just depends on what your comfort is.
And, you know, there's the wrong and the right moment, you know, because I do get people, of course, bowling up to me and saying, gee, what happened to you, you know, and at times I'll make up a story off the top of my head.
I was going to ask, have you been tempted with a wood chipper incident story?
Oh, I've got to tell you a quick one. I'll just try to be quick. I was making a documentary about amputee fetish travelling through the States, and we went to Florida. I'd been away from home for 2 months, and in the Florida, this part of Jacksonville in Florida, there was this zoo, and in the zoo was the Australian section. I just saw Australian, I'm going to go there. So anyway, so I went to the Australian section, having a lovely time wandering around gum trees and all this and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I get to this enclosure that's got this enormous saltwater croc in it. I tell you, he is 4 metres long. He's this enormous thing. And I'm staring right down and thinking, aren't they amazing? And this, I just sense this presence on my right, and I turn around, and they go, there's this lady standing there with a little boy, and she goes, oh, excuse me. You know, we were just standing over there, and Johnny said to me, oh, Mom, look at that strange lady. You know, why don't we go up to her and ask her what happened? And I looked at him, and it was just the wrong moment. You know, I looked at them, and I go, how old are you, son? And he goes, oh, 7 or whatever. I go, you know, when I was 7, see that croc there? Old Salty. Salty! Salty came up to me, you know, swimming through a river, you know, up Darwin way, you know, in the territory, and all came up to me. Snap, bang, smash, blood everywhere. You know what it's like, kid? And I go, and I recovered, And every year on the anniversary of Salty taking my arm and my leg, I come here. I come all the way to Jacksonville, Florida. And I stare down the barrel, Salty. I stare down the barrel and I say, Salty, you're behind bars and I'm free. Well, the pair of them, it was dreadful. I looked at them and they both looked like they were going to, like, have coronaries. Both of them. And the lady, I wished I'd touched them for a 50. And the lady said, oh, well, thank you, and walked off. And I think they'll never forget that.
Hey, this is Dan Savage of Savage Love and the Savage Lovecast, and you are listening to Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only LGBTQIFTSQA community radio station.
And you're on Hide and Seek on that radio station. Thanks, Dan. With Avi Miller, that's me, Andrew the Apprentice over there. We're joined in the studio by Kath and Jax, who are talking all things sex and differently abled. There we go.
You threw in a differently abled.
It was going to happen at some point. Someone had to do it.
I'm seeing how far I can get before one of you slaps me.
Well, it's a long way to slap over the desk. I have to say, it's probably not going to happen.
Come on, make an effort.
Well, ask me another question, darling. Throw one at me.
No, you've both done, I'm reading your bios, you've both done research and a number of degrees and research into sex, disability, fetishes. What got you into why that in particular?
I think because in this society, people with disabilities are viewed as asexual and viewed as not having a sexuality. Or if we do, it's kind of often perceived as that we're going to be kind of bottoms and we're not going to be tops and we're not going to have some kind of sexual power and agency. And so for me, as a queer woman, that really pissed me off, to be honest. And I was like, well, I actually do, and I know what my sexuality is, and I'm really strong in that. And so I started being a nerd and researching it and writing about it and doing all those kind of things, and then going out and getting laid a lot, really.
can't. Kath, sorry, I'll come back. I wanted to get Kath's background first, then I'll come back to you. What made you go into studying this?
Right, I was horny as hell. No,
there's a trend forming, I think.
Look, I guess as sex lives go, I don't know. I had this instinctual thing when I was 15 to hang around with the artists, the freaks, the people living on sort of like cultural, social margins, you know, the poofters, the queers, the dykes, all that sort of mob really appealed to me. And that was a really good idea because basically that's where, you know, I got laid. And I started to kind of then meet other disabled people who didn't have that sort of, who basically weren't getting laid. And I started to think, why? Because I hadn't really thought that I never would or that that would be a problem. I just, you know, because I remember actually one time I was in northern New South Wales and I was helping a friend move cabins in this place we were staying. And she said, Kath, could you clear out that drawer? And I opened the drawer. And in the drawer were all these prescription meds. And I'm like going, Jesus Christ. And I said to her, look, I don't mean to be personal.
Fun weekend now, right.
I don't mean to be personal, but why are you taking all this shit, you know? And she goes, oh, well, you know, I am a bit depressed. And she goes, you know, I'm thinking of losing my virginity. And I'm like, man, aren't you in your 30s? Yeah. And I'm like, whoa. And she was talking about this really dodgy plan for losing a virginity or whatever. And I guess that really started me thinking about why disability and sexuality seem to be sort of fraught. They don't always seem to work together as nicely as I would like them to or anyone else. And that's when I really started theorising about it. Yes, I did wander through disability fetishes thinking, hell, if we go here, maybe people get more sexual options. And that's still kind of an area of interest. But I think one of the things that kind of really interest me about it are, you know, attitudes in general around difference, non-normativity, heteronormativity, you know, the same sort of rules that oppress us kind of oppress everybody, you know. It's like ableism is everybody's problem. So I think we all have an inkling that there's a problem here. What we're not perhaps so sure about is what to do about it.
Jax, have you found that once starting to talk about this, that people come up and say, it's not something I've ever thought I could talk about?
Yeah, I find definitely within the disability community as a wider community, there kind of is this thing around body shame and lack of confidence and this perception that finding lovers and finding relationships and finding one night stands is going to be this super hard thing. And I think for a lot of people that it is, and there's really valid reasons for why that is. But I think, like finding ways in which to find sexual and body confidence is something that really interests me, and particularly interests me, how do I, like, as a person who's just turned 30, how do I talk to young people with disabilities about how to develop your sexual confidence and this assumption that you deserve relationships and that you're going to find them and that they're going to be healthy and they're going to be good for you. I think is a really one of my big interests.
And do you think that the queer community is more accepting of difference?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I think a lot of queer space assumes that it's going to be, and there always is those radical people that are in a space that are really thinking outside the box in terms of bodies and sexuality and sex and kink and all that stuff. But a lot of queer spaces tend to be pretty conservative in terms of what they think is sexy and what they think is desirable and good. And I've actually kind of found, like, I've been in queer spaces looking like a massive lesbian that I do. I've got bright red hair and I'm wearing a rainbow t-shirt at the moment, etc. And I've had people come up to me when I'm wearing this kind of stuff and say, you know, you're in a queer bar. And I'm like, oh, honey, do I look straight? Like this thing of like, if you have a disability, you should be at home in bed. And if you have a disability, you definitely wouldn't be at a club trying to pick up for a one night stand. And you definitely wouldn't want to be a top in that situation or be in charge of that situation. So there's a whole heap of assumptions. And I have a lot of people saying to me, you know, do you think your life is in some ways easier because you're queer? Because this, the whole thing of what you just said, that, you know, queer community is going to be more accepting. And I would say in some, like, I'm really proud of being queer and that's my sexuality and I'm not going to change it or whatever, whatever. But I think in some ways, the assumption is that it will be easier because women are going to be more accepting or something. There's some underlying gender stuff going on there. And I would say not necessarily. Like, there's a way bigger, straighter pool out there to find your lovers from than there is in this tiny kind of queer interweb that we're in. So, yeah.
No, because, of course, the gay male stereotype is of body beautiful. The pedestal is placed on men who are not just good looking but are perfect looking. They have to have symmetry, they have to have muscles, they have to have the bulges in all the right places. And do you find yourself fighting upstream, not just against the body beautiful, but now you actually just have to fight for body similarity?
Well, you know, I mean, the image that you hold up of the great big muscled guy with lots of hair or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever floats your boat.
Clothes, whatever. The reality is that the vast majority of gay guys don't look anything like that, and they're all still out there humping their little hearts off. And so there's this kind of, you know, illusion of perfection that we like to think operates, and I think discrimination comes from there. But when it gets down to sexuality and what's sexy, go to any club and start staring at people and looking at who's sexy and who isn't. And it doesn't necessarily get down to those boundaries, you know, those strictures. So, you know, we're kind of fighting these kind of illusions here around what people really want. Because I think, you know, what a lot of people want isn't just the physical. There are some people who are just into the outline, like whatever, that's fine. But most people want this sort of like connection that's sexy and interesting and, you know, are prepared to work with that. And so, you know, that's where I've sort of had luck, I suppose, is just being able to, you know, foster that.
No, I'm going to... I warned Kath and Jax that I get to ask the stupid questions. You both were born with your disabilities.
Yeah, though I've acquired a couple on the way too. But I'm a bit older than Jax, so yeah.
What was your first time like?
Oh.
When you lost your virginity?
Yes.
I kind of lost it twice, you might say, because I kind of lost my virginity in a kind of a sensual, touchy way with my girlfriend when I was 15 and she was 16. We went to the same girls' high school in Sydney.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know that we actually came or anything. We just did a lot of touching. Anyway, that was kind of... So that was like amorphous pleasure or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Polymorphous perversity, I think it's called.
That needs to be on a T-shirt.
Yeah, I love that one. And then I lost my virginity, you know, penetration guy-wise when I was 18 with this cute guy who was a performer with a performer group I was involved in. And I remember it just really hurt a lot. It was very exciting. But it actually did hurt. And I, you know, that typical girl thing that you read about where they sit back and go, oh, is that all it is? Oh, and him going, God, let's go again. And me going, no, we are not going again. But, you know, it took a little while for that sort of sexuality to be pleasurable.
Yeah, I guess the first time I slept with a woman was a bit of an anticlimax in the sense that she said to me, oh, the only reason we're here tonight is because we couldn't get men.
What?
Oh,
that's
wow.
Terrible line.
And I was like, honey, I've been spending 4 hours like making out with you and getting to this point. And
if I wanted a man, I would have had a man.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Like, I'm here because I really wanted you and I wanted you in particular. And yes, I wanted a woman. And yes. Yeah, so that was pretty disappointing. I got up and left at that point.
Oh, it's a total turnoff, really.
Now, Kath, you mentioned a little while ago that you did travel around the state filming a documentary about disability fetish.
Yep.
That's right. So you've got a bit of background in that. So we're going to go to a track shortly, but we'll be able to chat more about that right after this.
Yes.
And get into some even heavier stuff, I'm no doubt. You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We're speaking with Kath and Jax about sex and disability.
Hide and Seek.
Shut up, babe, and talk me rich.
The most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. I'm Avi Miller. Across the desk from me is Andrew the Apprentice. We're joined in the studio by Kath and Jax.
Yo.
And we are talking sex and stumps. There you go.
Okay.
Because, Kath, you describe yourself as a...
ring.
Yes, as you said, Benster pansexual switch stump-fucking goddess.
Yep.
And you did a documentary about... We're gonna use
amputee
the
fetish.
There you go.
Yeah. So I don't know what to answer first. Let's do stump fucking first. Well, look, I was really okay. So I have a left arm. I have two stumps on my body, but let's just talk about the arm because the leg. Let's not talk about the leg and sex. It's just too much. But let's talk about my arm.
That's a whole other show.
It's after 10:30. You can talk about anything you like.
But let's just talk about the arm. And so you might say the arm. My left arm ends just on the elbow. And it's got this really nice little nose thing, like a G-spot vibrator nose. That little nose on a G-spot. Anyway, and it's fairly thick around, but not as big around as a fist. So it's kind of like it's a lesbian cock. Let's just go. It's lesbian amputee cock or something. But anyway, I had never thought of that until I had this kind of casual affair with a woman, actually in northern New South Wales, one of my first visits up there, who was this lovely person who, smooch, carry on, orgasm. And she goes, Kath, it's about your arm. And I go, yeah, right. And she goes, well, I would like you to fuck me with it. And I was like, really? My arm? My God. So I would have been, how old was I then? Probably about 36. And so we went at it. And I realized that I had discovered this new thing. But anyway, sort of around that time, within, 5 years of there or whatever, I realized to my surprise that it wasn't just lesbians who are into stumps, which is what I thought, but, that was me. That guys were into them too. Now, I might add, tragically, all the guys who are stump fetishists that I've met have not wanted to be fucked by my arm, which is very unfortunate. So if there's one out there who really... Anyway, so what happened was, so I started doing research because I was a radio feature maker with ABC and Triple J and Radio National. And then I went to Northern New South Wales to live and I decided I wanted to do freelance and I found these stump fetishes. So I rang Radio National in Sydney. I said, have I got an idea for you? I want to do this story about amputee fetish. And they were like, yeah, Kath, do it. So I did. And while I was in the Sydney studio sort of fixing it up, I got a phone call from a friend who went to film school with me saying, Kath, SBS have just rung me to say they can't take the idea I've pitched at them because our producer's gone crazy. And they've said, can you find another idea? So what do you got, Kath? What do you got? And I said, I've got this stump fetish thing. And next year in Chicago, the biggest group of stump fetishists and the biggest group of amputees, the Amputee Coalition of America, are going to be in the same place on the same weekend. Let's go. And we did.
Jesus.
We got funding under the Accord, which is in those days by the Film Finance Corporation and SBS Independent, to go to the States. We had a fabulous time. And shoot this docker, following amputees around me, around blah, blah. And just prior to leaving, I was sitting with my production team, which is four of us, and we were going, we've never met a fetishist. Shit, what are we going to, like, what do you talk to him about? It's sort of like you saying, what do you talk to a disabled person? What do you talk to a fetishist about? Anyway, so I said, look, I'll find one. So before we left for the States, I found one in Sydney. He came around to visit and I had him that night. I'm sorry.
Well, it was all for research. It's science.
It was amazing. If you can imagine what happened then, I had a bit of experience. I had a great sex life. I'm just going to be blunt about it, whatever. Mm. But that night, that guy, it was like I was this goddess. I've never been undressed and touched like that. Like I was this worshipful thing. And that was the power of the fetish. And I hadn't realized that yet. That it's sort of like, say your image of the perfect person is, 2 meters tall with red hair that's, flaming something or other, and they're green. And then suddenly one drops on your lap and that's the way you're going to act. And I hadn't ever had that before. That sort of like, my God, I am a supermodel. I am totally, for this guy at this moment, I am a supermodel. And I was hooked. And so then off we went to the States. And I had many more adventures, which I'm sure we don't really know. Totally a slut.
There's a lovely saying that everybody is somebody's fetish.
Well, there you go.
I ask, though, do you worry about objectification by fetishists that the only thing they're interested in you is your stump?
Oh, come on, guys. Who doesn't objectify everybody?
No, I know, but
why am I more vulnerable or more stupid or more weird or more at risk of being objectified than anyone else? I bet there's people that just go crazy over Jack's red crown hair thing, you know, and go up to her because of that. You know, if they then spend all their life just licking and touching that, that would be very frustrating for Jax. But if that is an attractant that then makes them want to know the package, that's what we do to everybody. And I'm saying stumps but are no different from breasts or ass.
And but Jax, what's been your experience? Have you had a fetishist coming after you?
Well, I had a really interesting experience in that I met a girl at a party, and the only information I got off her that night was that she was on Tumblr. And so I got her Tumblr handle or whatever you want to call it. And I decided to start up my own Tumblr just so I could kind of, you know, have some ongoing contact with this person because she's a babe. and anyway, so I just posted some pictures of myself, like fully clothed pictures. One of them was me with some stockings on with a T-shirt on that says Piss on Pity. And big bright pink lettering. And then I didn't know that Tumblr, when you post something, it is public and it can get reblogged by whoever, wherever. And so I've logged on like a few days later, and I found out that my fully clothed pictures had been reposted like 500 times. And I was like, this is a bit weird. Like, what is going on here? And I followed some of them, and they were on amputee fetish sites, like GIFs of like porn, women with no arms, you know, naked, and then my picture, and then really like full on stuff underneath it, like presuming that I had paralysis and couldn't be able to feel X, Y, and Z, and therefore these guys could like bone me. And so that was really interesting because I felt like I hadn't sexualized myself in those photos. In fact, I'd been quite, you know, like an activist, like a queer activist looking person, you know, doing my thing. And yet my body had got recontextualized in this really overt sexual way on amputee fetish sites. Now, I clearly had all my limbs in those photos. And I found that really, really disturbing, and that it was posted so many times in this really overtly sexual context. And that in a way I thought, well, what recourse do I have? I can't do anything. Like, it's all public. It's all out there. I'm just like, here's some porn. Here's me. Here's some more porn. So I found it really one-dimensional, and I thought, well, they don't know anything about me. All they've got is this image, and thank fuck they can't make it move, because I'm sure they would have maybe been doing something super kinky. But like, yeah, so not as a counter to what you're saying. I agree with a lot of what you're saying.
No, I agree with what you're saying too.
Yeah.
I see that. I'm a member of FetLife. Most people should know FetLife. And I am on a crusade to stop that because I don't mind, to be honest, because I've put my image out there, nude and whatever, in cultural life, not just in a porny sense, but there's lots of different images of me. I actually don't care what they do much with me. However, when they take pictures of people out there on the streets and they write the most hideous crap, really disgusting. I don't want to go there, but it's really, really, it's abusive stuff underneath it. Yep. I've actually then reported them to FetLife. I've got those pictures pulled and so forth. So I totally agree with Jax. It's sort of like, you know, there are some really horrible people in the world and there are some really good people in the world, and there's a spectrum there. Mm. And those people are the ones who should never get laid. And
I think it's interesting because I think disability, in a sense, what I find is it's kind of like a beacon. It's a beacon for the really interesting people that are really thinking outside the box, that want to have really interesting discussions and live interesting lives. And then it's also a beacon for the complete and utter douchebags of the world.
It's so true.
We get like the two sides of it. And I do think that it does allow me to have a really interesting perspective and live a really fundamentally interesting and beautiful life, but it also puts me in continuous contact with just the dickheads that just want to say the most bizarre, stupid things over and over again.
It's very true. I'm with her.
Yeah.
Uplifting, informing, empowering.
Hide and seek. Yeah.
Joy 94.9. 94.9.
You are on Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9 with me, Avi Miller. Over there is Andrew the Apprentice. We're joined in the studio by Kath and Jax, our beautiful stump-fucking goddesses.
Well, I'm the stump-fucking goddess, yes. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sure given half a... Come on.
So
anyway.
So
I want t-shirts. We're all goddesses. We've had a text in. Before I get shoot myself more
in
the
face. Where, darling?
We've had a text in 0427 Joy 949. Loving the show and music. Have a great night. All from Des in Footscray.
Thanks, Des.
Kath, we missed something.
Spit it out, Andy.
Yes, I'm trying to. I'm just going,
Go on, don't be embarrassed.
Okay, some fucking.
Yes.
Practicalities. Is there a best lube you should be using?
Let's talk logistics.
Well, actually, you know, even just you with your little cute face asking me about that, it reminds me of the greatest regret of my life. Well, among a few. One of the greatest...
Settle down, children.
One of the greatest regrets of my life was at a tropical fruits party, New Year's Eve, stinking hot, subtropics, rain is pouring down, and this gorgeous gay guy, who we both know but will remain nameless, says to me, Kath, do you know that arm stump of yours? Do you ever, you know, use it, you know, like a cock thing? And I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, my God, please, would you please do me, you know, like, I know, look, I'm gay, whatever, you're whatever. But I would, and you know, I turned him down. I could just shoot myself. I could really. It's one of my greatest regrets. What was the question?
Lubes.
Well, the same lubes that you'd use for, you know, fisting or whatever. I just use some. I really like, because I don't roll a condom over my arm because I guess it's got no body fluids to give away. So it's just flesh against flesh, ladies. Anyway, so I have that beautiful silicon lube that comes in the black. Yeah. I'm really bad with brand
That's
names
right.
and shit. And
but
then
just normal
just
silicon
that
lube.
Plain water-based one, squirt in the pack. You know, whatever that is. And so just, yeah, whatever. But I like to use a lot. And it's sort of like that thing, it's a bit like fisting in that there's kind of like a little kind of fatter bit, which is effectively my small elbow. It's not like a real, it's not like a proper forearm arm. I mean, everyone at home is looking at their forearm thinking, no, what? I mean, they're, you know, what do you call the upper bit? The upper arm going, no way, Kath. But it's less developed than my other arm. So you've got to kind of like open the, we're talking about women, unfortunately. Yes. Well, you know, anyway.
No,
still remembering that guy.
Hang on. As somebody who flags red right, that is smaller than a fist.
Exactly. I'm glad we've got confirmation on that.
So from a fisting perspective.
Blunt.
Yeah, and there's no, when you start with a fist, there's no bulge that you have to go past.
It's not as big a one. There's a slight one there. But, you know, once you get over that, now probably the deepest I've ever had it in is probably only about, what's that, about 5 inches or so.
Right.
But it's rather fat.
Yes.
And it's, so yeah, I use a lot of lube as we're going. Because you know how like the bigger something is, the more lube it seems to waste. So I always have the lube right there, squish, you know, on. And I remember one fabulous time my ex-partner, who I absolutely adored, who was just a stump receiving goddess, God rest her, she's dead now, unfortunately, saying to me, because I was sort of like, no, darling, I'll just be very gentle here, you know, I just, and all this. She goes, Kath! And she, oh, sorry, I shouldn't have shouted. And she just sort of like pulled me inside. It was just amazing. Oh, my God. Anyway, I'll never forget that.
Jax, as we said, stump fucking's not your thing, but are there other practicalities, you know, do people freak out with a wheelchair? Do they not know how to support you in that way, or?
Not really. Like, one of the things that I found that really helped with my sexual confidence and stuff was, I brought a woman home who we'd been kind of eyeing each other off. I come from a small town. We've kind of been eyeing each other off from, you know, years and years as it is. She had a partner, et cetera, and then they broke up. So I finally brought her home and we're finally, you know, it's 3 a.m. in the morning, we're at my place, and she goes, so where's all your sex toys? And I was like, oh, I just have my body and your body, and I was just planning on, you know, that's great. And she's like, no, I'll come back in 2 weeks and I expect you to have a heap of sex toys.
So she gave you homework.
She did. And I spent all my pension money and then got a bag of sex toys, and I've never looked back since then. So I think that for me, one of the things that I would say to people with disabilities, and particularly young people, is invest in whatever sex toys really interest you, learn your body with those, because it really does allow you then to kind of have a level of a bag of tricks, basically, that makes sex fun and makes sex exciting and makes you feel like you know your body and you can get off and you can hopefully help someone else get off or they can get off themselves. And so that's kind of what I have and where I start from with people when we're kind of heading in that direction. And
bloody good advice. I like that.
Because that's a lot of what you talk about, isn't it? Body positive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So how do you define body positive?
Well, it's kind of counter to the whole idea that sex is, and particularly sex and disability, is often framed in this kind of medicalized way of like what you can't do with your abnormal body or what your issues are going to be, or, you know, you're going to feel bad about this and that and the other thing. And while I think everybody in life struggles at different points with body image issues, I don't think you necessarily have to as a person with a disability. So I like to kind of think about things in more of a positive way, like what can you do? What do you want to do? What is pleasure for you? How can you learn what pleasure is? How can you learn to say what you want? I think we are so scared, particularly as queer people, as women, as people with disabilities, of finding a sexual language, of developing sexual confidence and the capacity to go, hey, this is actually what I want. And being able to kind of verbalize yourself, I think, is a really, really sexy thing.
Mm. And flirting, you know, being able to kind of get that sort of atmosphere going. Everyone should get good at that. No matter what their bodies or other,
I think often as a person with a disability, it's reliant on you to take that first step or be able to say that first thing to kind of make someone have a level of intrigue and relaxedness around a body that they mightn't have gone to bed with before. And so learning how to kind of be sexy and say sexy things and hold someone's hand or whatever when they're going into that space is what makes sex hot and work, I reckon.
And being that confident can be a hard slog to build that confidence up, can't it?
Yeah, but yeah, it totally can. But it also, like, I've had a lot of situations where I'll be being really sexually confident. I've clearly gone home with someone for a one-night stand, and then they'll assume that, like, I'm feeling bad about my body because they assume someone with visible difference is. And so that's also hard. It's like, as a feminist, I want to, like, help you in that space where you are feeling not so okay. But also, like, I'm like, don't assume that I'm going to be feeling shit, because if you put yourself in my position, whatever you think that is, that you might like. And so that's equally as hard to come up against that again and again.
I think confidence also comes from this place. I mean, one of my favourite expressions is rejection tastes better than frustration. And all the times I've been attracted to people, I've let them know I'm not one of those useless lesbians. Why are so many of them sitting around going, oh, I've been looking at so-and-so for 3 months. Do you think they're single? And I'm going, man, ball up and ask, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So what's happening with your love life? Want to go out. What the hell? I mean, and if they say no, so? There's 5,000 other people in the queue after that one. Just do it, you know? So I'm pretty bold with that. And I have been turned down, but you know what? I have picked up well.
On that note, Kath and Jax, thank you so much for joining us here on Hide and Seek tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It has been a delight and a pleasure.
It has been.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.